RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the what will be a jam-packed Friday edition of the Dark Delight podcast with
December 20th, Val, and
Beans. I can't believe it's December 20th already.
Oh, I do. Like I said the other day, Christmas 2020 is already over. It's just, I love the buildup to this time of year so much. And then it's just so fast. It really, it's almost like a wedding day that comes up every year.
Yeah.
The wedding, it's just over. Just gone.
I know, it's done. And then you're like, okay, I love Christmas. It's my favorite holiday aside from New Year's. Those are my two favorites.
Yeah. And this is why I have made myself love Thanksgiving more and more every year, because it's the beginning of Christmas. Yeah. To put Christmas up on a mantle is to make all of the 5 to 6 weeks before it that you really need to enjoy it disappear. You need at least 5 to 6 weeks to enjoy Christmas.
You do, because it's the buildup of seeing the tree every day and the music and the weather and
getting dressed up for dinners and all that stuff. Yeah, it's good stuff.
In your Mack Weldon?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. I have to get more of that just for this and that next year.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. So
what are we doing?
Oh, Lord. Very busy show today. Lots and lots to talk about. So I guess I'll start by saying one of the things that's it's made me a little frustrated is how there have been all these people all over television for the past several months with this impeachment thing, saying it's not a big deal. You know, we're not even going to pay attention to it. It's just a big farce. You know, I'm not going to warrant give it my attention to it. Pundits and stuff like that who were shirking it off in a way because of how dumb it was what they were doing. But all of a sudden now it's the most important thing they've ever seen.
Oh yeah, no, I understand people who said, you know what, I'm gonna sit today's hearings out. I sat out the last 3 or 4 days of hearing. I mean, after the people who came up and were called before Schiff's committee and were supposedly fact witnesses. Well, once the fact witnesses stopped. The fact witnesses that had no direct evidence and no direct knowledge or experience in anything and contradicted the entire plot summary, then I was like, okay, well, we can afford to take a couple of days off. It's just people and their opinions. What are we going to do? So,
well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who didn't take it seriously, people who said it was not good television. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, just people who didn't take the fact that these idiots are completely going against everything our nation stands for, the Constitution, etc., so on and so forth. And you know, people were kind of saying, oh, it's boring. It's not, you know, it's not entertaining to watch. And we talked about it. And
yeah, I said myself, it's bad writing just at the base of it. It's awful. But you knew that they were going to push it through. That was the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think you're getting what I'm trying to explain, so I'll just let it go. But now, you know, now that it's happened, it was devastating to me because watching the country fall so far and then seeing it culminate in something like this was just knowing how far we've come, like how far we're gone on that there is a group of people in this country like this that don't care about anything, that break every single rule and are never held to account. It was, and then pretend that this was like some somber thing for them, right? Like some somber thing, but then start cheering when it happens because they hate you so much that they can't even hold it in. Mm-hmm. It was a depressing day.
The cheering and Nancy Pelosi having to silence them. I think that the I joked last night, these are not people you want to bring to a funeral, especially if they say this really was the somber day it was, that they didn't even, they just got done. How many hours of statements did people give before the vote on Wednesday night, Tracy?
It was like 10 or 11 hours. Well, actually, let's see. It started at 9. The impeachment vote was around 7. So 10 hours or so.
Yeah, the vote was probably around 8 o'clock, because so, I was just after my break when we saw the countdown.
So 11 hours of testimony.
So they're acting, they're playing a part for 11 hours. And after the vote, they forget all of the lines and all of the character descriptions they're supposed to be embodying. And some of them actually start clapping again. It's just like, you people are awful, just awful, awful people.
I was stuck listening to it. I listened to it, most of it anyway. My husband and I listened to it during the day, and then I listened to it at night. My kids were at a basketball game. I was waiting for them outside. And one of the clips, one of the things that infuriated me more than some other is, this is Steny Hoyer. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
It's short, but it's important. This sums it up right here.
For setting forth a compelling case. They've been laid out fully in the articles before us and by colleagues in their remarks. What I will do is remind Americans that the House provided President Trump every opportunity to prove his innocence.
Oh.
But the witnesses were precluded.
To prove his innocence. That is just the standard, my friend.
I've been overrun, not overrun, but these idiots keep coming on my page making their stupid, uninformed, uneducated comments. They're arguing with me that in an investigation, you're guilty until proven innocent. And then once you get charged, your rights change all of a sudden. Like freaking morons. There are a bunch of morons walking around on this earth. Yep. And a lot of them are concentrated in the United States of America. A lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
That is antithetical to everything this country stands for, what that man just said. How do you prove your innocence?
Well, isn't it obvious, Tracy? You splay your entire life out on a table and you allow every rock, stone, everything to be kicked over, examined. Everything. You have to go to confession. You have to just spill everything. Prove your innocence. And because at that point, they'll have you so opened up wide that even the original things that they said that you probably have done, that can go to the wayside if they find something else that they think they can spin, which of course is what they've been trying to do the entire time, because no matter how many times people went up there and talked in front of the microphone about the president committing to one act or another, most of those, if not all of them, are not even included in the articles.
Yeah, no. And they couldn't include them because there's no proof of them at all.
Nothing.
There's no proof of anything at all. That's the thing. Like, my kids were asking me, because I guess it was going around, you know, the president got impeached and, you know, what's going on, Mom, right? So I explained it like this. I said, William, you're Viviana over here went to the cops and said that you robbed the bank on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. And she told them, and she said, my friend told me he did it. And then the cops go to the bank and they check the security camera. And not only was the bank not robbed at 2 o'clock by you, it wasn't robbed at all. But even though that's true and they have the tape, they bring you to jail and they lock you up. And then when it's time for your trial, you're not allowed to have an attorney to defend yourself. You're not allowed to call any witnesses that can vouch for where you are and where you were that day. And the prosecution that's trying you for the crime that they say you committed alters the videotape live in court. It's the same thing.
It's a great analogy. It's a great way to break it down for people. It really is, especially for a child. It's a great way to break it down.
They were blown away. Like, that's not fair. You think?
But you know what? Everybody who thinks is a good thing. This is why the first thing that the media did the media, the intelligence community, the Democrat Party, which is pretty much the entire the same thing. And let's, you know, let's not be too shy about saying plenty of Republicans as well, never Trumper types, the Uniparty, the entire system at first. That is why it was important to turn Donald Trump into a monster.
Yeah.
If you turn him into a monster, then you obviously, I mean, what length would you not go to get rid of a monster? So there's so much people will forgive now. They will forgive so much, and they will not pick up on so many blatantly dangerous concepts like proving your innocence. Okay, people will forgive a lot because of the way that we have been prepped and the way that minds have been softened and prepared for this kind of attack.
And this is why we've been saying this entire time that the media is complicit.
Like, oh, yeah.
I would argue criminally, to be honest.
Yes.
I mean, I said this before. It is at that level. Like, there are two separate countries here. And the gall of Nancy Pelosi and these people to even have to go on television and say that they're worried about a fair trial. First of all, there's tons of reasons why they're doing this, holding back these articles of impeachment from the Senate. One of them is they have no freaking case. Now the Democrats are demanding more witnesses and McConnell saying, you guys made your case. This is it. This is it.
Yeah. 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You had 6 weeks. Why the hell do we have to? I mean, you use your majority in the worst of ways. Why the hell do you expect another chamber of Congress to bend over for you, prolong this for more weeks, to call witnesses that you could have called yourself? What are you talking about?
Not only that, but they rushed this thing through. They rushed it through. And if they maybe had other things they wanted to get accomplished or wait for the courts to rule on the subpoenas, they should have waited on impeachment. But they didn't. They rushed it through. And now she's acting like the petulant child she is, along with the rest of them, stomping their feet. We're going to get our way. I hope and pray. It is time. The gloves are off. There is no more of this. We play fair. The only way that we're going to win is by being worse than they are at this point. Equally as ruthless, equally as ridiculous, equally as evil. There's no other way, in my opinion. They have to throw this back in her face and say, we're not just, who are you? You don't exist anymore. We're ignoring you, like they're doing in Virginia.
Yeah, but you know what? That's not equally as evil. That's where I would differ with you. The reason why they are dipping into the well of evil is because they have a goal to accomplish and they have no means of doing it with anything that is real. If they actually stood for something that could be verifiable, and that could actually have any kind of weight or grounding in reality, they wouldn't need the evil behind it. All they would need is a set of balls and a little bit of steadfast attitude.
I will concede because it's not what I said was an emotional statement, not necessarily reflective of how I always feel, because we can win on the merits.
That's it. We have the merits. We have the law. You have the Constitution. We have history on our side. The problem is that, I mean, we just don't nobody has the balls to stand in place and say, no, it's not happening. Nobody has the balls to take people and throw them into jail.
Yeah, it needs to happen. Like, enough is enough already. Like, these people have gotten away with so much. I was talking to someone this morning. And he was saying, you know, Andrew McCabe basically admitted to treason live on television. And he was able to walk freely out of the studio and go back home when there are people getting arrested for nonviolent crimes and being thrown in jail for decades.
Well, let me also say something outside of I know outside of how many people have been wrongfully executed, you know, before there was the real big advances in forensic evidence and all that stuff. I understand how tragic it is to even think about somebody being on death row knowing you didn't do it and you're going to have your life extinguished. But it is also it's becoming more and more clear, seeing how the way that the world and the country is run, why it is so imperative for a for groups of people to get rid of the death penalty, because anything that doesn't kill you can be pardoned. Okay. Mm. Anything that doesn't kill you can be pardoned. And if this is really the culture that we're building, I understand why there's so many anti-death penalty advocates out there, especially when treason is just like the norm.
It is. There are two separate countries. There really are. And I am watching anxiously with bated breath at what is happening in Virginia. I'm sure you are too, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be the first real attempt that the government in a locality is taking to remove constitutional rights from law-abiding people.
And they haven't even done this in California.
I know.
You would think that the knocking, going door to door, the stormtroopers, we would see those introduced in California or Portland or something like that. It's Virginia.
Yeah. And you know what we talked about Virginia right after those elections? Who paid for the law enforcement in Virginia to win? Soros.
Well, oh, yeah. So that was part of his DA funding?
Yeah. Four of them. Millions and millions of dollars. Basically the sole funding source for their campaigns. It's an experiment is what it is.
They're always dipping their toe into the water to see how the temperature is.
They picked the wrong time to do it because there's a very large majority of this country who is sick and tired and has had enough. And I keep saying it, they're poking the bear. Jonathan Gilliam, however you say his name, the guy who was attacked at that party, the former Navy SEAL, just this morning tweeted, you got to hear this. He said, "This week, my friend, the Honorable Louis Gohmert, told me personally and stated publicly that he's not sure this great nation will last much longer. Like so many, I see exactly what he sees. Therefore, it's time we begin considering the possibility of civil war. Quote, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants."
Oh, yeah.
Straight out said it.
I'm glad that they're saying it because now it gives me permission to say what I've been holding myself back from having in-depth conversations about for months now.
Yeah.
Them. What's his name? Clay Higgins from Louisiana. He was one of the standout moments. Oh, yeah.
What did he say? I missed his.
Did you see it?
No.
Yeah, pause it. I'll find it.
Yep. All right. Let's listen to him now.
"I have descended into the belly of the beast. I have witnessed the terror within, and I rise committed to oppose the insidious forces which threaten our republic. America is being severely injured by this betrayal, by this unjust and weaponized impeachment brought upon us by the same socialists who threaten unborn life in the womb, who threaten First Amendment rights of conservatives, who threaten Second Amendment protections of every American patriot, and who have long ago determined that they would organize and conspire to overthrow President Trump. We don't face this horror because the Democrats have all of a sudden become constitutionalists. We're not being devoured from within because of some surreal assertion of the socialists' newfound love for the very flag that they trod upon. We face this horror because of this map. This is what the Democrats fear. They fear the true will of we, the people. They are deep establishment DC. They fear. They call this Republican map flyover country. They call us deplorables. They fear our faith. They fear our strength. They fear our unity. They fear our vote. And they fear our president. We will never surrender our nation to career establishment DC politicians and bureaucrats. Our republic shall survive this threat from within. American patriots shall prevail. Mr. Speaker, I yield."
Wow, that was good. That was good. It's history making, that what he just said.
No, people are ready. People are ready.
I know. I'm going to cry. That's how, like, we're like, really seriously, this is like a very defining moment in our country's history, what's happening right now. Straight up. I don't care if you want to talk about it being something made for TV. You can feel it in the air. It is palpable. It's really crazy.
Yeah, no, I had a few other people. And the thing that gets me is this: the reason why we're coming to this point is because things are so bad, so in so many areas.
Yeah.
I had one or two people say, you know, Frank, this impeachment thing is just all wag the dog stuff. I think No, mm-hmm. No, it's not. They did not trigger. They might have triggered impeachment as a desperate. They wanted to remove him no matter what. And they needed, at this point, they needed to find a way to get him out of the way forcibly, because 2020 is going to be an insurmountable hill for them to cover. And then the other side of that is 4 years that they have absolutely nothing to defend themselves with. On the other hand, impeachment on this particular situation with Ukraine is important because of the rocks that had been kicked over and the things that were being found in Ukraine, the real things that are being talked about. It has 2016 implications and a lot more. So, you know, you look at impeachment, and you say, no, it is about impeachment. It's very concerning in its own right. It is being used, obviously, to obfuscate other things that are related to impeachment topics. But aside from that, it's not being used to deflect away from anything else. The $1.4 trillion omnibus spending bill, this is not something that people have not seen coming. It wasn't a sneaky thing. That's just the norm. The spending's out of control. The shit that's inside of that is out of control. It's nothing new. So I don't buy any of that whole thing that impeachment is wag the dog. It is what it is, and things are just bad in various other places. I don't know why. I don't know why the spending bill's being entertained the way it is, but there's so much, and we're on the brink.
Not only that, but there's a lot of people who have brought up to me, and I have to read it, that this USMCA isn't all it's cracked up to be.
It's not. The only question I have been asking Tracy, and I have not gotten anybody to give me a concise nutshell yet, is does it improve upon NAFTA at all? Is it a slight, like, what are the improvements? Because Chris Ann Hall came on the show the other night, and the reason why the USMCA, from a constitutional perspective, is garbage is because the treaties that could be made through the executive branch and the Senate
individually.
And the Senate is between governments individually.
Yeah.
It doesn't impose regulations on people. On us, it doesn't create laws for people. And what they did is they created a 6-person tribunal of unelected bureaucrats, 2 from Canada, 2 from Mexico, 2 from the U.S. that are pretty much determining economic policy for Americans. So whether it was NAFTA or whether it was this, I mean, there's no place in the Constitution for it. It almost mirrors the climate accord in Paris in that respect.
Well, the thing that bothers me about it is how, also, I haven't read it yet, but we had all this time to read it, and we can only kick ourselves for not doing it with everything else we're distracted with. It was important. You know, President Trump's been talking about this bill for over a year. We had every opportunity to read the thing, and we didn't. And now it's passed with no outcry from anyone, left and right, passed it. God knows what's in it. Our fault. Completely our fault.
This is why I wonder who delivers the selling points, the pros and the cons to Donald Trump on stuff like this. Who sells him on this? Who sells him on promoting? Who sells him on the supposed all around safety of things like 5G? Who sells him on this stuff? Who's showing him the material? Who's drafting and grabbing the material and the studies? And that's all I think about when I see stuff like this go on.
You know, obviously there have been record breaking accomplishments under this administration that have put this country in a financial place in terms of how the economy's doing anyway. It better than we've ever seen. Unemployment is ridiculously low. People are doing well for themselves. But we have so many other problems to address under the surface. It's almost like, Jesus, what else is there? You know what I mean? It's hard. It's hard because we keep spending this way. It's over. Come on, guys. Let's be real. Okay. there's so much to fix. It's almost inconceivable how we do it without destroying everything and starting over.
Well, that's why I was always thinking, where is there a little bit of Cloward Piven in all this stuff? Are we behind the scenes? Is somebody preparing a transition? Is somebody preparing some kind of a transition into a new financial existence? Yeah, system, something like that.
Yeah.
Listen,
there's evidence out there to support that that's happening. There really is. There's lots of it. And there's been a lot of people who have been following that for a really long time and have been waiting. And it's going to be this week, going to be this week, going to be this week, going to be this week. And every week it gets pushed back week after week after week after week. And I will believe it when I see it. When President Trump calls a press conference and says we're going gold-backed dollar, that's when things will change.
Well, you know, the thing gets me, Tracy, I look at so many people over the centuries now have pointed to the United States as one instance after another of divine intervention and manifest destiny and all that stuff. And you think about the opportunity we had and still have here to have a country that is insulated by two major oceans on either side, that we have, well, for the most part, a pacifist neighbor to the north. And we only have one really, really problematic border to the south. And with that being said, we should be able, as rich in resources we are and everything else, we should be self-sufficient. We should be able to be a non-interventionist friend with the rest of the world. I understand if you're landlocked in a place like Europe, it might be in your best interest to have treaties and to have alliances made. But still, the military presence around the world, the dependence on Middle Eastern oil to prop up our currency, nothing makes sense. And there's so much that needs to be done.
We've gotten here over how many years has it taken to get to this point? And at least we're doing something. At least, you know what the problem is now is that we're trying to, it's gotten so far out of hand that now we're trying to at least fix it somehow. And
I'm good with making little baby steps, because baby steps are fine, because as long as it gives way to a bolder generation of congressmen and women that come in, maybe even in 2020. You know, who knows? Who knows what could be accomplished in the next 4 years
if
the president has a majority that is not only not only just a numbers majority, because we know what a lame duck majority looks like from his first 2 years.
Willing to work and cooperate and get stuff
done. What about a bold majority? If that's all it would take, you know, a majority of people like Rand Paul, who do the Festivus Report and says, no, this is all got to go.
Yeah.
If they actually have some sway, can you imagine just turning $1.4 trillion into an $800 billion at first, whittling away?
You know, and I think that there's a really good possibility that we can do that. And you know, if people start stepping up to primary some of these swamp rat nincompoops that are running, that are in seats, because we're starting to see quite a fair bit of patriot representatives. I mean, I heard a bunch of people talking the other day and I was like, hell yes. And it wasn't lip service, because you could feel their passion. You know, Doug Collins was up there freaking screaming his head off. Poor Gohmert was basically in tears. He was so distraught over what they were doing. Because can you imagine, like, standing up there really loving your country? Like, we feel it as citizens. Can you imagine being in that position and being unable to just take these people and wrap your hands around their neck and strangle them and shake them while you yell? Can you imagine having to maintain some sort of decorum while Nadler screams that you were just spouting Russian propaganda on the floor of the House?
Oh, yeah.
You saw right?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I can't imagine. I can't imagine, because it's hard enough. It's hard enough for me not to do physical harm to my studio from hundreds of miles away.
Yeah.
When I see it.
Yeah.
It's hard enough for me to do not do physical harm to my studio when I'm watching that stuff. So I,
and then, you know, we're working towards justice. We're going to go over some of the clips from the Horowitz hearing nobody really saw the other day because they're really important. And we're going to go over some clips from the Barr interview. And he's out there doing these interviews to try and calm us down. You know that's true, Frank. You know it. He talked about this himself. He made the point himself that we're getting to a point where everybody's been doing this in positions that understand what's happening in the landscape of this country. Like, everybody's been saying we're getting to a dangerous point, because you want to know why? You know, there's only so much you can piss off somebody before they decide this is it. It's enough is enough now, and something has to be done, and no one else is doing it. We're going to do it ourselves. And again, Virginia, they gave the people the power to organize and form militia again. Basically authorize them. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, they activated the militia.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, listen, there's the other thing here too is there are police officers who are members of militia. There are police officers who have family and friends in the militia. All over the place in state militias. These are not, this is, they are, it's once again, it's one of those things where if there's bloodshed, it's better. In the chaos, there's so much that could be done. You can run, I mean, you can, it's like lighting a stink bomb and having everybody in the room start panicking, running out. I mean, you can grab the China, you can grab whatever the hell you want on the way out during the chaos, or it just takes a pressure off of you, or it can be used to be spun into something bigger. That's what they were trying to do with the 2018 midterms, with the border and the leftist funded caravans. They wanted people to be mowed down at the border.
I know.
They are this nuts. I mean, they tell you that they're taking up a solemn task,
yeah.
But they couldn't stop themselves from clapping. And I said last night on the air, our biggest problem here is in getting not getting fooled, but our biggest problem is actually expecting from time to time that they might actually be serious when these are the people. These are the people who have doused the Empire State Building in pink floodlights to celebrate abortion. I mean, it's the same people. I mean, Virginia, Governor Northam, when he's not wearing blackface, he's talking about keeping newborn babies comfortable until the mother decides what to do with it. It's, you want to talk about Virginia? Jeez, they don't care about life.
God. Do you think, before we go to these clips, I didn't necessarily intend to talk about this for a half hour, but I think people are thinking all these things. So do you think that they're ready for what's going to happen? Do you think they're really ready for it? Do you think they're actually doing this because that's what they want at the end of the day? Or do you think that they're just expecting that we're going to roll over and take it forever and they're going to get their way? What do you think?
Well, what do you give me an idea of what they expect to be coming? Because if it really is scorched earth, and I know that you've cast shadows of doubt over anybody who really pays close attention to the stack, the 100 now 150,000
indictments.
Sealed federal documents there that you say they're not necessarily indictments, but
yeah.
It's anomalous. This pile of it is very outrageous and out of the norm. What if? If you're talking about something that is large and sweeping and might be terrifying in scale, then I wouldn't be surprised if that is what they are expecting, something large, sweeping, terrifying in scale, a legal smackdown, and something unavoidable that cannot be spun finally. If that is what they're expecting, I wouldn't be surprised if something just as big and chaotic it has to be conjured on the other side to match it. We have seen to this point, there is not going to be a day of reckoning where they hang their heads and say, oh, wow, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. I've said it before. We're not going to get our Scooby-Doo moment. So we're not going to get any admissions. So what do they have to match any kind of chaos that might be coming, that they expect to be coming. I don't know.
I'm thinking to myself, like, there are really two different silent sort of races going on at the same time. There's the accountability race that we know the Barr and Durham are doing using the United States justice system. And then there's a bunch of people that don't play by any rules, frantically running, screaming fire while they're dousing gasoline behind them to keep the fire burning, trying to get out in front of whatever on the right has happened, whatever on the other side is happening.
I would say that they're actually running with the gasoline tank and they're leading the fire by making a trail of gasoline into a warehouse of black powder. What is that warehouse? What is the finale barrage that's being planned? They have to have something to counter everything. So what the hell is it? And what would you do? You have an idea of what they might be expecting?
I mean, for everybody to go to jail for, because once Brennan, Clapper, Comey, McCabe, maybe the way Barr is talking, which we'll listen to in a minute, maybe even going all the way up to the White House at this point, once all of them are arrested and indicted, they're going to know, you know, and they're looking at private actors too, not just government actors. They're going to know they're not going to be able to say that this is just a purely retaliatory thing. You know, unless that they seriously want to burn the country to the ground, because we've talked about this before. And when the Flynn Sullivan thing happened the other day, I said once law and order and any sort of dependence or any sort of reliance that the justice system in this country is secure, once people stop completely trusting, not that they completely trusted it, once people stop trusting at all the courts, federal, state, etc., and judges, etc., all of them, then it's over, because no matter what you do at that point, somebody's gonna say I don't believe it, and then what, because then there's no foundation at all. And
then it's militia justice.
Exactly. And the Sullivan thing the other day, I looked at it and I said, you know, I just don't see how, with people like this making decisions, I don't see how you're going to get fair trials out of any of this stuff. I just don't. You know, the whole jury of your peers thing is great, but all your peers are on the, quote, militia of the other side, who doesn't care if those people committed crimes or not.
I made that observation when we saw the payout from San Francisco that was ordered to Delanian.
Oh, yeah.
For exposing the butchery that goes on at Planned Parenthood. They were ordered to pay $2.2 million to Planned Parenthood in damages. And that is a decision that was passed down from a jury of their peers. I mean, if these are the peers, what did you think? You were talking about private people going out or private entities there too. What did you think? Because I know you had to have seen it. What did you think about Glenn Simpson's article for The Guardian or whatever talking about how the UK has a Russian infiltration problem after the Boris Johnson win?
I you know, part of me is like, I can't believe they actually think that, like, they're not changing any minds or you know what I mean?
No.
They're not. They just look like morons, and more people are seeing that. And, you know, that's a positive that we can't ignore. There are, I see this all the time. Again, I'm on the board of Walkaway. I see it every single day. I read the messages. There are swaths, tens and hundreds of thousands of people that are waking up and opening their eyes and looking around and saying, nah, I'm not doing this anymore. And it's hard because you have to do such self-reflection and introspection to be able to admit that you were that fooled, that you actually believed that crap was going on. For example, everybody was saying this is just some big PR thing or whatever. I'm going to differ with you. Here is the press conference yesterday. Well, Donald Trump sat and met with, what's his name, that left the Republican, the Democrat Party. What's his name?
He's from Jersey.
Yeah, his name is Jeff Van Drew. Sorry. Listen, Here we go.
It's who I always was, but there was more tolerance of moderate Democrats, of blue dog Democrats, of conservative Democrats. And I think that's going away. Two more things I want to say. One, you have my undying support.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And always.
And by the way, same way.
Thank you.
I'm endorsing him. Okay? We're endorsing him. I can't speak for these two gentlemen, but I can say I'm endorsing him.
Thank you.
How do you feel about that, Mike? Are you okay?
You have my support. Thank you, too. Thank you, Mr.
My support as well.
Put together. Thank you, leader.
Thank you.
And the last thing I will say, one of my heroes, and he's always hung in my office, I have a bipartisan wall that has a lot of different people on there, Ronald Reagan. And when he said, I didn't leave my party, right. My party left me.
That's true. That's what he said.
And I'm saying the same thing.
He was a Democrat, and he moved over, yeah. And he said exactly those words. It's fantastic. Thank you very much.
So many people are doing that. And you know what? Maybe it reshapes conservatism a little bit, but we'll bring them over. They'll get it. Whose side do you think that the people in the middle are going to be standing on when the shit hits the fan?
Well, you know, especially this, Tracy, and I always go back to, I go back to 2016 when it was the last time that the real big never Trumpers and the crazy left had an opportunity to really get a leg up on Donald Trump. And that was when he was an unknown quantity. Now that he has been president for the last 3 years and he is a known quantity, mm-hmm. and we see the impact on the economy and unemployment and the impact on the stability and the reputation of the mainstream media, which is the biggest thing we needed. We needed somebody to be a culture warrior, to say the words, to put the idea of independence and anti-globalism into the heads of people. I mean, the spending bills were not going to stop. They were not going to stop off the bat. They weren't going to be corrected within the first 4 years, especially. But to be able to do things like stand in front of the UN and say no to socialism, to just say outward, to at least stop the public love affair with these dangerous ideas. No matter how slowly we had to walk this over here in the United States, all that stuff is on the table now. He is a known quantity now. And because all of the things that they said were going to happen did not happen, what have we seen? We've seen no new wars. We've seen economic turnaround almost instantaneously. We've seen nothing else but leftist craziness. That the only thing that has resulted, the only negative thing that if you're an objective observer of all this stuff that has resulted in the society has been the outlash from these crazy masked fools.
Yeah.
From the left. It's the only thing. You would think that it would be people in white hoods that were out in the street every year since he got elected based on what they were telling us in 2015 and early 2016. But we're not seeing the rise of the KKK. We're seeing the rise of the brown shirts. I mean, that's just what it is. So I that's the biggest thing going into 2020. He's a known quantity now, and everything else has only amounted to whining and crying and the left defecating all over itself, thinking that they're making some kind of a point. So good luck with that.
Just to close this segment out, let's listen to this real quick. Chuck Todd. Hold on.
I'm trying to make some sense of this. And you said at one point, you talked about the heavy, momentous thing that's happening in our country. Wherever you are on the political spectrum, Chuck Todd, it's a sad morning in America. What does it all mean? Where do we go from here? How much does this really matter in the grand scheme of things?
Well, you know, it depends on how far back you want to pull back the lens here. In some ways, you know, this is the end of a decade that has been just hyper-partisan, hyper-toxic, the toxic politics, the mix of social media. So you could make an argument that it was almost inevitable that our politics were going to end with this kind of showdown over impeachment. So in that sense, it sadly feels like a almost a predictable next step in this escalation of a partisan war that now feels like it's obviously gotten too overheated to the point where at times it feels as if culturally we're in a cold civil war.
You think?
At times it feels. We've been saying cold civil war for years now, ever since they concocted the Trayvon Martin stuff. Ever since that, you want race relations were fine.
Yeah.
Fine. No matter how much the media said that any kind of reasonable criticism of Barack Obama was rooted in nothing but racism, we were fine until 2012 when there needed to be a big reelection push, and we got the preemptive pullout, the premature pullout over there in Iraq. Right around the time that all the Libya stuff was being stoked. So you had all this stuff going on. Of course, you have Russia. You had the hot mic with Medvedev. You have and then, of course, the fact that you have black Americans that were starting to see right off the bat nothing was getting better for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing was that first 4 years of Barack Obama, nothing was getting better for them. And he was losing their support. And all of a sudden, what do you know? There's race riots in multiple cities over the course of 3 years, starting in 2012. I mean, this is just cold civil war. It was hot at times, my friend. And you helped sell it.
He said, yeah. Yeah. And he's still doing it. Talking about this crap. The reason why we're here is because of you. If you would have just told the truth, this never would have happened.
Well,
that's at the bottom of it. Seriously, if they would have just told the truth, we would be the most jovial, peaceful nation right now. If they would have just told the truth, think about how people would be all at the same time outraged that the United States government was spying on Americans opposing political campaigns, that they were running a secret coup behind the scenes and still are. People would be outraged by that for the most part. But instead, they were lied to for years about this Hitler-like figure in the White House they needed to remove. And here we are today with wedding guests in dresses and gowns beating the hell out of people they disagree with politically in a hotel.
Oh yeah.
You know, I didn't plan for this entire show to be this, but it is what it is. I haven't gotten to talk to you about it, and you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think that if we weren't going to change these things, Frank, like if things weren't going to change, if things weren't going to get better, we wouldn't be doing this right now. Like, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Nobody would know. Nobody would care. It would be business as usual. Everybody would be like, you know what? Donald Trump's a bad guy. Take him out of office. You know, if Mitt Romney were president and they were doing this to him, which they wouldn't have done, nobody would be reacting like this. But something has changed in this country over the past several years. And we're at a point where we're going to fix it and we're not going to accept less than that. And that's a good thing, because otherwise,
fingers crossed, yeah.
Otherwise, I don't even want to think about what would end up happening if we didn't fix it. Ay, ay, ay. It almost feels trivial to go to the bar interview now, but we will.
Hey, you know what? I heard that Barr gave some, you know, gave some really big indicators that the spin of people like Chuck Todd and the people that they allow to come on and tell their side, like James Comey and all that stuff, is not what we should commit to memory, and not what we should hold up as the truth. And that there is not a difference of opinion, but a difference of material fact. And that's what I took away from all the clips I've seen. And well, if we're just going to quickly apply that to everything we're talking about here, then I think that it would be a great refreshing moment for a lot of people, as well as a distressing moment for other people, if we can finally have some material facts presented. And hopefully it comes in an overwhelming tidal wave.
Yeah,
material fact.
I know, and I agree with you. And I think that's why Frank, again, he's doing these interviews. There's no other reason for it. There's no other reason for it. He gets it. One of the other things he gets that I think has been a common thread for frustrated people out there is that it's all about protecting the institution, right? That's all these people ever say. You know, like Lisa Page on the Maddow show the other day, which I really wanted to get to today, but Lisa Page on the Maddow show the other day calling the FBI, my FBI, my Justice Department.
Yeah, like, yeah. Her Girl Scout troop. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, like she owns the joint and people, no. Here's Barr explaining to you why things are going to change now.
I think there's some of them very hard to square with the idea that these were just mistakes and sloppiness. I have said that a number of these episodes leave open the possibility of inferring bad faith or improper motive. But I hasten to add that, as I've said all along, that I've reached no determination on that, nor do I think a final determination on that is appropriate until all the evidence is in. The Horowitz himself, in his testimony, I think pretty well summed it up, which is this could be, on the one hand, at the very least, gross incompetence. On the other hand, it could also be improper motive. And he was not in a position to make that call. And that's why we have the U.S. Attorney, John Durham, looking into this.
Yeah, and I want to ask you more about that in a moment. Are you surprised that James Comey is so convinced himself that all of this was completely above board? He came out and said there was no treason, there's no spying at all on the president.
Well, I think the IG report and the recent letter from the FISA court, I think, pulls the rug out from under that analysis. There was serious misconduct, as the court itself has said. And one of the things that I object to is the tack being taken by Comey, which is to suggest that people who are criticizing or trying to get to the bottom of the misconduct are somehow attacking the FBI. I think that's nonsense. We're criticizing and concerned about misconduct by a few actors at the top of the FBI, and they should be criticized if they engaged in serious misconduct. That doesn't mean we're criticizing the FBI, and I think the tack of trying to wrap yourself in the institution and say, gee, people who are criticizing the decisions I made are attacking the institution. I notice people don't do that as far as I'm concerned. People feel free to criticize me, and I don't say, gee, you're attacking the honest men and women of the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. I think leaders, you know, have to own their decisions and are fair game if they make bad decisions.
Yeah. I think they have to own it.
They do have to own it. Here's another one.
Basis as the attorney.
Listen to this piece of his interview with Chris Wallace and get your reaction.
He does not have a factual basis as the Attorney General of the United States to be speculating that agents acted in bad faith. The facts just aren't there. Full stop. That doesn't make it any less consequential, any less important, but that's an irresponsible statement.
He said that you made an irresponsible statement about these FBI individuals.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I made the same statement effectively and substantively as the Inspector General, which is there are unexplained misconduct that are, it just can't be easily explained as to what was going on there. And as he said, it could involve bad motive. And he was not in a position, given the limited scope he has, of making that final determination. So it's not speculation. But, you know, I think there are episodes there that simply cannot be squared with innocent mistakes. And I think people have to come to terms with
that.
Were
you surprised that he see?
People have to come to terms with it. Now, it's a good segue into the thread that I did yesterday to one or two sections that I think we should just go over before the end of the show.
Yeah.
Let me just find it because I didn't. Well, first of all, there's this thread in here with one specific guy. Hold on. Bear with me. I'm going to pause it real quick. I found the clip that I was thinking of, but not the exact one. It was one in the same sort of chain. But this is Josh Hawley, who asked so many great questions at this hearing yesterday, or 2 days ago. And this one here is about, everybody was complaining about the lack of referrals, Frank, or the lack of criminal referrals or whatever that happened. Let's listen to this quick 1 minute long exchange and listen to what Horowitz says very closely so you understand why Barr is encompassing all the people that he is at the upper levels. Here we go.
Correct?
That's correct.
So the FBI absolutely knew where this was coming from. What about the number of people involved? How many people at the FBI were involved in misleading the FISA court by your count, your estimation?
We don't have a precise number of exactly who knew what when, but there were four different FISAs. There's a case agent. There's a supervisory agent who are reviewing each. There was some overlap, so it's not eight. I think it's either six or seven who had both of those responsibilities, some of which, to be fair, were more egregious than others in terms of the mistakes and the failures that occurred. And then, of course, as we note here, the reason we refer people up the chain is there is information flow up the chain, and even though those individuals didn't have direct responsibility under the Woods procedures, as managers and supervisors, we believe they had a responsibility to ask the probing questions they should have been asking and followed up on information they were getting.
So he says the reason why we referred up the chain, what he means is he sent them over to DOJ.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal because they got all of it. This guy here is trying to make the case that there was no bias here. It was all just mistakes. Two clips and then we're gonna have to call quits for Friday. We'll finish this off on Monday maybe. What do you say?
Whatever you'd like. It's gonna be good on Monday.
Yeah,
we should have cocktails on Monday. At 10 in the morning.
Let's do it.
Bloody Marys?
Yeah, I love Bloody Marys.
I don't know how to make them, but I just know it's a morning cocktail.
Oh, it's so easy. It's vodka and tomato, the mix, and some celery and pepper and Tabasco sauce, some olives. Make them hot and spicy.
Okay.
It's good. All right, here is Senator Peters. This guy is something else. They even know, Frank, when they're doing this, how wrong they are. They know they're wrong. They're trying to guide Horowitz here into saying something that he's just not saying in this hearing. The other hearing was in front of all the cameras. Everybody was showboating, right? Much different than this hearing was. And it's kind of frustrating, to be honest. Here we go.
So if I recall from your testimony here today, is that the errors that were occurring, the fundamental errors and basic errors related to the FISA process, you didn't find any evidence that there was political bias there, no documentary evidence. The errors occurred, and those are troublesome, but you didn't necessarily link those to any political bias. Is that accurate?
So I want to draw a distinction there. What we didn't find was, as they were considering in August and September whether to seek a FISA, we didn't see evidence there in those communications. But as to the failures that occurred, we didn't find any of the explanations particularly satisfactory, in fact, unsatisfactory across the board. In the absence of satisfactory answers, I can't tell you as I sit here whether it was gross incompetence. And I think with the volume of errors, you could make an argument that would be a hard sell, that it was just gross incompetence, to intentional, uh-huh, or somewhere in between, and what the motivations were. I can think of plenty of motivations that could have caused that to occur, but we didn't have any hard evidence that I can sit here and tell you, why did these occur? I can tell you they occurred. I can tell you we didn't get good explanations, but I can't tell you why.
So you heard that loud and clear,
yeah,
right? Now, this is the same line, this is the next thing this guy says. That had to hurt him. Because no, that's not what you wanted to hear, is it, buddy? Here. Listen to this ridiculousness. This just...
But it's conceivable those bad explanations are a result of a systemic problem with the FISA process. So it's difficult, I would ask, it would probably be extremely difficult to answer that question until you complete your further audit to see whether or not this is a systemic problem within the FBI that has to be corrected. It wasn't something just with this particular case. Is that accurate? How would you look at that?
We certainly wouldn't make any conclusion about systemic or not. As to the failures here, in the absence of the satisfactory answers and the given how basic some of these were, how fundamental, this was not an error because this was too complex. You didn't understand that the fact you right. gathered here was inconsistent with the fact you were relying on there in the FISA. These should have been told, and I think you see this in the FISA court opinion yesterday.
Right.
These should have been told. These were basic right. fundamental errors. It's hard to figure out what the rationale is, which is why we're not sure what the motivation was.
Yeah.
Well, but I just wanted to clarify that the way you'll know that is if you, as you're looking at other cases through your audit and you find that these are occurring.
No. Right. No.
No. My stupid bumbling friend, the thing, and he knows it's cover up mode. He knows exactly what he's trying to bury in a shallow grave right here. The whole point here is that there is no possible way that this individual case could have been propped up, created, and sustained for as long as it did with this many errors without it having intentionality there.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that case, it should then, as a secondary thought, give you a little bit of an impetus to say, you know what? How many other instances was the system abused like this? This is not a matter of, the system was made in a faulty way, and this is just the way, you know, this is just something that's not, you know, this is not personalized in any way to Russia and Donald Trump. Maybe it's just a systemic problem that we need to tighten some screws a little bit. No, my friend. Yeah, there are questions about what the system allows, but there are no questions about how this started and how it was sustained.
It's laughable to me that tack that they're taking, that, you know, that it was just a mistake that they make all the time. And it just so happens they're looking at this case. I mean, if I say this a lot, if that's the case, let's pretend devil's advocate. These people are right. Wow. We have some really poorly trained FBI agents here, and all of these people at high levels of the FBI, these career bureaucrats and law enforcement officials, just make these mistakes all the time. We have so many bigger problems than this FISA spying, if that's the case. Can you imagine if a bunch of freaking morons of that caliber were running our country and our law enforcement and our national security apparatus?
Especially since FISA warrants have like a 99% approval rate.
Yeah, but can you imagine if they were that stupid too, Frank, though?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. If they were that stupid, and if what this guy's trying to say is the reality, or a reality that we should be considering more than the fact that they were actually going after the president or the president-elect or candidate Trump, combining all of that stuff. Incompetence of the people within the system. The system is rickety itself. It didn't have any safeguards built into it. It's not like safeguards were built into it. I mean, you're looking at – tell me something, Tracy. What system would allow people to go before a court to get a spy warrant on American citizens that would allow for the omission – of evidence, was that something that they forgot to put in there when they created FISA?
Yes.
I mean, that's not a systemic problem. These are people who are leaving out evidence that would halt a mission that they want to launch.
We'll close with this one because there are a couple other clips that I think I could play based off of our conversation, but this is good. This is Johnson.
Plenty of There really are a lot of controls in current law that, had they been followed, the Woods procedure, I mean, other requirements that the FBI and everybody knows this, they have to be scrupulously accurate. So there's plenty of layers of control over this FISA application, correct?
there are a lot of layers of control.
And I realize your limitation, you can't really recommend legislation. You have to kind of stay within your lane, the Justice Department, but right. Do you really think another layer of controls is going to fix this problem? Because this was caused by people circumventing.
Right.
And he finishes here. Wait, hold on.
Some of the informant activity and others. With regard to the FISA, I agree. I think there's, and this at the hearing last week and this week, real questions about are there does there need to be legislative activity here? And of course, there's also now the FISA court has put out its order, and they're going to have some involvement, obviously, in a significant way in that decision making as well. That's well beyond the executive branch figuring out.
My own personal opinion, for somebody who has definitely supported the FISA court, you know, largely because we were told, well, show us where their abuse has been. Mm-hmm. That these applications are approved at such a high level because it is so rigorous. It is so scrupulously accurate. Now, that's been completely blown. Mm-hmm. I think the FISA court is in jeopardy, personally. And I view that as a very serious issue in terms of our national security. So I think it was James Langford talking about that. So I agree with his concerns.
And that was basically the point. Like, these idiots on the left are trying to excuse this behavior just to save their dumb, stupid faces that nobody believes anyway.
Oh, well, yeah, it was just all mistakes, right? I mean, everybody makes mistakes.
Freaking morons. Sorry.
Evil. Evil. But, well, you know, before we go, did you... I'm just seeing this right now, but did you hear Adam Schiff on Rachel Maddow last night?
No. What did he say?
Apparently, he says he's acquired evidence now on Mike Pence. Mike, the vice president's office on Ukraine. This is
they're really trying to get Pelosi to be the president. They're really going to do that.
Here, hold on a second. Wait a second. Wait a second. Hold on. I want to get this. I want to get this to you.
Pausing it real quick. We're back.
Okay.
Say it again.
Just go ahead and play it first.
Ones. I'm thinking specifically about a letter that you sent to the vice president's office this week, in which you raised questions as to what the vice president knew about the president's behavior, the president's scheme in Ukraine, and thereby essentially his potential involvement in any cover-up of that behavior by the president. Are you actively looking at Vice President Mike Pence and his role in this scandal? And should we expect further revelations, either related to the vice president or related to the other core parts of these allegations that have resulted in this impeachment tonight?
Well, we have acquired a piece of evidence, a classified submission by Jennifer Williams.
Smiling.
Something that she alluded to in her open testimony, that in going back and looking through her records, she found other information that was pertinent to that phone call that we had asked her about and made that submission. There is nothing that should be classified in that submission, but yet the vice president's office has said they are going to assert classification or that it's classified. It is not proper to classify something because it would be embarrassing or incriminating. And that submission does shed light on the vice president's knowledge. We think the American people should see it. Any senators in the trial should have access to it. But it just goes to show that there is a body of evidence.
I just want to smack this man across the face. He's smiling.
This is...
It's not proper to classify something because it'll be embarrassing? Why don't you talk to your friend Barack Obama? Holy shit.
First thing that man did was hide his educational records. Listen, you know, we've talked a lot about society being on the brink. People like Adam Schiff are daring somebody to do something to him. People like Adam Schiff in the face of all the lies, from his grandstanding on having acquired evidence that was indisputable about Russia,
to trying to get naked pictures of Donald Trump from fake Ukrainian, fake Russians.
Everything that he has done that has amounted to nothing, and even this impeachment that obviously has amounted to nothing. They were able to impeach the president by merit of them having a crazy House majority alone. They have a majority of crazy people who will be standing side by side with each other no matter what. And they were able to pass articles of impeachment on merit of having a majority alone. If they had anything else, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi would not be playing this game of, well, we need to delay the Senate thing until we can have things go our way. What is your way? Chuck Schumer saying that we can't bring it to the Senate until we're able to call more witnesses and stuff like that. And he admits that if they're not allowed to call more witnesses to the Senate to do work that I guess they couldn't get done. If you're telling me, because pretty much he's saying that they don't have enough evidence to remove the president. Well, whose fault is that? You spent 6 weeks in these hearings in the House and you didn't bring up your best witnesses?
Not only that, you notice how people tend to find things hiding after the fact in these cases? This has happened 3 times now. Oops, we made a mistake. Gotta fix it. Oops, I found more emails. Gotta add them. Oops.
Oops, we found another box of ballots.
Right, right. I am so frustrated.
There's no talking and reasoning to with that face.
God.
That bulging bug man face. There is no talking and reasoning. There is only strangulation, for me at least. There's no reasoning.
Fantasy, of course.
It's just a fantasy of mine. When I'm sleeping, I have these fantasies. That's it. You know what? That's my motto. That's my motto for 2020. There is no reasoning, only strangulation. It's a play off of that line from Ghostbusters.
I was going to say there is no
Dana, only Zool.
Zool has become us all, Frank. We are all Zool now. Watch out, because they've unleashed the Zools. There is no reason, only strangulation.
That's it. Strengthen your hands, folks. 2020 is going to be rough.
God, I'm so angry. Help me.
Well, we did some overtime today.
Yeah, because there is so much.
Thank God for the damn weekend. Thank God.
I need to take a couple days and breathe. I need to. I did.
Go ahead. No. You did what?
I did a tweet the other day in a moment of sheer anger and frustration.
That's always a bad move.
No, it actually went more like quote viral than when President Trump retweeted me.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
What'd you say? I didn't see it.
I said in words, hold on, I'm going to find it. I said in words just exactly what I was thinking at the moment, which had to do with these Democrats cheering after they impeached the president. And it was just a quick little 3 second. What are you doing this weekend while I find it?
This weekend, tonight I have the Christmas show. My family's coming in the studio.
Ooh, I got to watch that. Gotta watch.
I got my mother and my father. Last year, I just had my father in, but I have my mother and my father, and I'm sure Anthony will pop in and out too. Lauren might even come by. So,
awesome.
I already have questions coming in from all over the place about that they want to hear, you know, Christmas memories and stuff like that. It only takes a little bit to open up the door for conversation with this group. So,
I know.
That'll be good. Saturday night is going to be another. It's my Saturday night show for the month. So we're going to on air. We're going to make cocktails of our own. We had recipes submitted from people for their favorite holiday drinks.
I love that.
Yeah. So I picked two. I have this, it's called a Colorado Bulldog. It's pretty much like a White Russian. And the second one that we're going to do, we're going to brew a pot of coffee and we are going to, I think we're going to spike. I didn't want to do the Irish coffee because there's no Irish people in the studio that night. But there is. I'm going to do something with amaretto. So I'm posting up the recipes today. So anybody who wants to make these cocktails along with us and enjoy it from home, they're going to be able to do that. That'll be Saturday night.
The Zambuca.
There's Sambuca, but I'm a bigger fan. You know, I had a shot of black Sambuca 2 years ago, and I threw up.
You're not supposed to do it like that.
Yeah, well, I was pressured into it.
God.
And so I would rather, I like amaretto a lot better.
Amaretto is very, 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 a lot more tasty.
It's very tasty. I love it. It makes me feel
warm.
I don't know. It makes me feel like I'm actually drinking Christmas.
Yes.
Yes.
Nutmeg. Put some nutmeg in there.
Sure. I'll find something to do.
So I really quickly, now that it's, you know, it says all of these somber Democrats just cheered as they impeached the president of the United States. Let that sink in, America. They couldn't even contain themselves to keep the lie going. That is how much they hate you. That was it.
Well said.
My grandma's coming today.
Great.
Yeah. I'm gonna spend the
week. Is she coming from up north, or is she already down there?
She's in Florida.
Oh, okay. So she is coming from down south.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you kind of split the difference from all your family.
Yeah.
You're like right in the middle of New York and Florida.
Yes. Yes. As you know. Yeah. So it's going to be a good weekend. We're going to decorate Christmas tree on Sunday at my mom's. And we're going to have a good old time together. And we're going to bake cookies on Saturday. And I'm going to be happy for the next 3 days. See, I'm already feeling happier just thinking about it.
But you see, that is the whole point here, Tracy. This should be the only thing on people's minds, especially this weekend, Monday, Tuesday. This is what people should be thinking about. And that is the thing that gets me most infuriated about what Nancy and her little troop of crazy Girl Scouts are doing. They have stomped all over the holidays. They stomped all over the holidays. I can't even imagine some of the houses, some of the fights, the walkouts, the things that are going to happen across the country. Because, you know, we have families, you know, thankfully, from what I've learned about you and your family and me and mine, you know, the people in my family don't agree on much. But I do know that politics is going to be forbidden to even, we're just going to chill. We're going to watch It's a Wonderful Life. We're going to make jokes. And everything that takes place outside of those four walls is not going to be relevant to us.
Agreed.
I know that much. But that's not going to be the case for a lot of people.
I know.
Especially the bigger the family gatherings, when there's just too many personalities, too many conversations. There's going to be things being said, people feeling slighted. And they are contributing to this. So
we have homework for you before we go today after this extra bonus 20 minutes of the show. You all are to put away the politics for a weekend and then pick them back up on Monday, but get rid of that shit for the week and enjoy your holidays.
I have to go see Star Wars on Monday night. Unfortunately, I'm nervous. I'm nervous because I wish I was excited.
My husband's there right now.
At Star Wars?
Mm-hmm. He kept Helga home from school and took her with him.
Yeah, I have tickets for the dinner theater on Monday night. So we're all going out there.
At least a bunch of good stuff planned.
Yeah. Oh, it's one thing after Monday. I'm not going to be live Monday night. I'm taking a half day. I'm going to do so pretty much you and I are going to do the show Monday morning, same live time. And then probably,
oh yeah, let's remind people. Oh no, that's next week. That's the next. Is it the next week or this week? I forget what I said. It's the next week. Monday's normal. Next Monday is going to be the live show.
Yeah. Well, you and I are going to record on Monday morning, and then I'm going to go live from my home office setup around midday for a little bit, because I won't be going live Monday night.
Okay.
That'll be my last shot of news for the almost the week. I don't foresee myself coming back before Friday.
So just a reminder really quick, and then we're really going to go today. Monday the 30th, Wednesday, no, we were going to take Wednesday off, and then Friday the 3rd. Monday the 30th and Friday the 3rd, you will not be able to get the podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcast, all that. You can get it on uncoverdc.com, or I'm sure Frank will have it up on his website as we're going as well. And we will live stream the podcast on Monday. It'll be all over our social media. And again, I'm going to have it going live on the website as we're doing it. Good?
Yeah.
You have been listening to a very heated and feisty Dark to Light podcast with...
What is today? Is today Friday? Friday. It is Friday. cocktails, Val.
And Beans. You guys can hear us again every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Monday.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.